You are listening to the Brighton Book Club on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, a monthly show about books and writing in Brighton and beyond. We're really excited to have two sponsors on board this month: Pre-Loved Clothing, based in Five Ways, and Unbarred Brewery, based just off of London Road. I'll be talking to Pre-Loved founder Vanessa about the shop and about her most loved books. Local journalist and bookseller Caitlin Gleeson interviews two collectors of secondhand books, Jeremy Carson from the Antiquarian Book Company and Nash from Much Ado Books in Alfriston. I speak to local romance author Emma Jackson and hear her read from her new book, Sleepless in Sicily. I also have a beer with the team at Unbarred Taproom to discuss their plans for Pride this year and hear about their new beer range. Our book club book is Joanna Trollope's City of Friends. Find out why I didn't finish it later in the show. Really happy to be joined by Vanessa, who is the owner of Pre-Loved. Welcome, Vanessa. Can you introduce yourself?
Hi, well, really excited to be here, Anna. Yes, I'm Vanessa. I have a shop called Pre-Loved of Brighton, which is in the heart of Five Ways. We have been there coming up for 8 years in October. I jumped career basically 9 years ago. I'd been working as a social worker or as charities and various sort of fundraising civil service over the years. And at the ripe old age of 47, I decided to open up a secondhand clothing shop in my neighbourhood, which is Five Ways.
And what do you specialise in? Because it's not any old secondhand shop.
Well, so I do. It's quite a wide range. So I'm very much a community shop. So when I first started, I wanted it to be a shop accessible to everyone, really. So you can come in the shop and buy something for £10. But equally, you can come in the shop, and I do have, like, at the moment, I have got like a vintage Chanel jacket and a vintage Gucci silk tunic from the 70s, which are hundreds of pounds. So it's mainly I suppose I've evolved over the years. I've been here almost 8 years, so I would say it's a mixture of contemporary sort of fashion, vintage, as in my passion at the moment is 70s fashion, so I've got lots of 70s fashion, high street, but equally sort of designer in independent labels. But I have learned a lot over the years, so I am quite sort of not strict, but quite because it's a very small shop, I have to sort of work out what works in the shop. So I have to sort of edit it, I suppose is the word, edit it down to what I think will work in for my customers and for the area that we're based in.
Are there things, Vanessa, that you get in and they always sell really fast?
Yeah, it's quite funny. So at the moment, I would say, yes, it's not necessarily the most obvious, thing. So for the first few years, it was saltwater sandals, which are the sandals that if you can wear them in the sea. So I would say up to about 2 or 3 years ago, as soon as I put those in the window or I put them on Instagram, people would rush up. At the moment, it tends to be clog sandals. Yeah, so clogs and Birkenstocks this summer are just flying out. Again, a bit 70s vibe with the clogs. And Birkenstocks, I think, everyone's just sort of wanting to wear comfortable but stylish shoes. So at the moment, I would say if I put a pair of Birkenstocks in the window, they will fly out, and equally clog sandals and traditional clogs as well.
That is fascinating. I would never have guessed the sandals, never.
Yeah, no. So I have all these amazing, beautiful, I do have beautiful clothes, but it seems to be the sandals that are the ones that are guaranteed to fly out.
Well, Vanessa, as I know, and I'm very flattered by, you do listen to the show, and you have told me when I've been in the shop before that your two loves are books and clothes, which is one of the reasons I approached you about coming on today. What is your favourite book of all time?
I think it was a difficult one. So I've gone through various things, and I think probably the book it'd probably be an Anne Tyler one. I was thinking about ones that I would. So I think probably Anne Tyler, The Accidental Tourist, because I think that was the first Anne Tyler book I came across. So I think that would be my favourite book of all time. I just think I love her. Yeah, when I first read her back in the early 90s, I think it was. It was such a revelation. Her characters, her dialogue, her effortless writing, just, and since then, she's my favourite author. So I think it would be The Accidental Tourist by Anne Tyler.
I love Anne Tyler too. I'm really glad you said that. I just think she's amazing.
Yeah.
I can't, you know, you read some books and you just, I can't believe how observant you are.
Yes, yeah, totally. And I don't know about you, if you read one of her books and then go on to another book, because she writes just so effortlessly, you know, her character, just a sentence will describe, you know, she doesn't have to labour a description. She can just write one line and you just know, you know, that character almost straight away.
Yeah, so, you don't want to be the author that someone reads after reading.
No.
What about something you've read recently and loved?
Well, I was going through my list. So I am a big fan of American contemporary writers. So one that I was thinking of that reminded me strangely a bit of like Anne Tyler, but slightly revved up was, and I can't remember it. Where have I written it down? Oh, yeah. Standard Deviation by Katherine Heine. I don't know if have you read that?
I haven't, but it's been on my radar for a while.
Yeah. So again, I came across one other thing. I don't know about you. I read a mixture of on the Kindle, and I do love proper books, but I'm a bit impatient. So I often just will download a book when I see something. So I'd seen it on a list somewhere and I hadn't read any of the blurbs. So I came across it and absolutely loved it. But it did remind me a bit of, like, you know, just the way that she describes the characters and the dialogue. It's a bit more, yeah, and I would say it's very Anne sort of Tyler-ish. So that one is the one that I think, I just thought the characters were great. The dialogue was great. It was funny. It was, yeah, it was joyful. It was just, yeah, you know, I really enjoyed it.
And are there books about fashion that you've loved in the past? I'm thinking, you know, fiction, but also biographies.
This was a difficult one. I did think about this and I couldn't think, it's terrible, but I couldn't. So the one that I came up with when I was going through, and it's a memoir, you might have read it, the Hadley Freeman memoir, House of Glass. I don't know if have you read that?
No, but I love her writing.
Yeah, so it's an amazing book. She sort of delves back into the history of her sort of Jewish family going back to Paris and Poland. But there's a bit in that, one of her uncle, Alex, is in the world. Yeah, it's just an, it is, I really recommend it. But he is in the world, he escapes from Poland, goes to Paris, and he's actually in the world of like Dior and fashion. So that was the one that I could, that was the only one I could think of. But it gave you a sort of insight into the world of sort of Paris in the sort of 30s, and then how he escaped down to the south of France in Vichy, France. But there was only a bit of the book, but that was the only one I could think of. But then I was desperately thinking of other books where fashion was a central theme, and I couldn't. So sorry, I shouldn't.
So to tie in with you being our wonderful sponsor today, we're talking about pre-loved books on this episode. So I'd quite like to know, what book do you think that you have lent out the most in your lifetime?
In my lifetime, I probably over the last sort of 5 or 10 years, I've sort of probably given My Policeman by the, you know, Brighton author Bethan Roberts, because I just love, I loved her characters and the setting. So I think that's one of, yeah, I probably actually would give it as a gift rather than lent it out. I think that would be my first on my first number one. And then also at the moment I'm because I'm 55 and lots of my friends are similar age, I have been again buying as a gift or lending out The Shift by Sam Baker, which is sort of like great writing about the role of women as we hit, you know, sort of 40 and plus. So they would be my two books at the moment.
And what is your favourite secondhand bookshop in Brighton? Because you are very close to one, I'm pretty
Yes, well, we're so lucky. Yes, of course, just around the corner from us is Savory's. So I've loved Savory's. I can remember it when it was a huge Savory's was a big shop opposite, which is now, I think, the pizza place. So when I had young children, I used to take them in there. And now, obviously, they've got a smaller one, but it's, yeah, no, I just love just going in, wandering in there and just looking at, yeah, picking up the books. And also, they have the books outside. So when I'm walking to my shop, I'm often tempted to sort of pop in and buy one as well.
Absolutely. I love it there. So Vanessa, thank you so much for coming on. How can we find and follow Pre-Loved physically and on social media?
So we are in the heart of Five Ways. We are right next to the Co-op at 267A Preston Drove. I'm on Instagram, Pre-Loved Brighton. I do post on Twitter and Facebook as well. But yes, and we're open just Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays at the moment.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Today, I'm speaking with Jeremy Carson, who runs the Antiquarian Book Company. Thank you for joining me today, Jeremy.
Pleasure.
Now, how long have you been bookselling, and how did you start as a book dealer?
Well, I've been selling professionally for about 10 years, and I started as a collector. I think a lot of people do start off collecting and turn into dealers at the end of it, partly to fund their habit, whether it's part-time whilst having a professional job, or partly like me, I guess a few people come to it and like it so much that are able to convert it into their proper job, which I've been lucky enough to do. I'm one of those people. I think there's a phrase for it, isn't it? Turn your passion into your job.
Yes.
I'm one of them, luckily enough.
Excellent. And in your job, what do you receive a lot of?
Well, I go to houses quite a lot and have a look at the books there. The difficulty is I don't have a shop, so I can't take what you might call regular books. I want to buy rarer, more valuable books, really. So I guess one answer to that question is that I get offered a lot of things which I don't really want. But mixed in with that, there's stuff which I very much do want, which I'm able to pay more for. So it sort of works out all right.
And what do you frequently get asked for?
These days, there's a lot of emphasis on what you might call unique material. So, for example, if somebody's collected books about windmills all their life, they're not going to ask you if you've got any books about windmills. They'll say things like, have you got any postcards about windmills? Have you got photo albums of windmills, sketches of windmills, that sort of stuff. So mixed in with the books, there's an awful lot of what you might call non-book material, associated material, which broadens out the subject. And that's actually one of the most interesting developments over the last few years for me, is to get into other areas, not just books.
And so when you go and collect these books and see these books, how do you determine their value?
Well, this is the thing. I mean, the trouble is there aren't so many book collectors around as there used to be, and a lot of books have really fallen off the edge of a cliff price-wise. People that were collected, even in the 90s and the early hundreds, the prices have plummeted, and there is a glut of them on the market. Lots of the older collectors have died, not necessarily just recently due to events, but just in general. And there's no new generation of collectors coming through to create the demand and to push the prices up. But of course, there's all sorts of other ways to determine the value. You can look on the internet to see what the recent prices have been for sale, go to auctions and discover that they're very cheap there, for example. And also, I'm afraid to say, at book fairs, you can see rows and rows of books for very, very cheap indeed, just a few pounds each. And there's an awful lot of them around.
And so, do you think, is book collecting a popular hobby?
It's not as popular as it was, no. However, that does mean it's an excellent time to start. The trouble is, there's no real impetus to this. The trouble is, there's nothing to light the blue touch paper, as it were. I really can't help thinking that there's a huge gap in the market for something like a television program to say, get out there and collect old books. Anytime you do see a book on television, it's a Harry Potter book for £10,000, or it's a vellum tome with some ancient man in gloves stroking it and whispering. And that's really not what book collecting is about. It's about getting down on your knees at boot fairs, looking through the boxes of stuff, and coming home with absolute gems. You know, it can be done.
And is that how you started, by going around to boot fairs and things like that?
Yeah, absolutely. Back then, you could go to charity shops and find good books, find them in street markets. I still can, you know, with my experience now, I can go to the boot fair up at the marina with £20 and come back with books worth 50 or 100.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a hugely profitable and good use of my time to do things like that. And also, I'm often at a book fair on Sundays. But it just shows what can be done with a bit of experience and a bit of knowledge.
Excellent. And what's the most interesting part of your job?
Meeting all sorts of people. It really is. I meet them in the houses when I go to buy the books, and I meet them at the book fairs when I stand behind my stall and sell them the books. You know, you get all sorts of eccentric characters, that is true. There's a lot of strange people in the world of old books, and there's a lot of friendly, helpful people as well. We all help each other. I'm in a professional trading organisation called the PBFA, the Provincial Booksellers Fairs Association, and it's fantastic. The minute you're in, your life changes so much. Everybody wants to help. They've got all sorts of advice and encouragement. We have 50, 60 fairs a year dotted around the country, and we meet the same people on the circuit and different people as well. So it's great fun.
Excellent. And what advice would you give to potential collectors?
Look at more than you buy to start with. The more you look, the better you buy. And you can begin by going to bookshops, spending time there, not money. I wouldn't personally get lured into old-fashioned topics. I won't get any thanks for this. I've never collected books which are already collected and attracting high prices.
Mm-hmm.
Go your own way and buy what you want. Focus on the condition. That's always important because experienced collectors just start to despise tatty books. And as regards, I don't know, more concrete examples, well, I've met people that collect a certain dust jacket artist, books published in a certain region, like Sussex, for example. I've always thought that collecting a single year would be a good idea, 1939. I've been saying this for years, people, because you've got plenty of time to build up a whole wall of books from 1939. And in 2039, that's going to look really interesting, really impressive, and nobody else is going to have one. It is that sort of sideways thinking that is going to put you ahead of other collectors, because nobody's looking for those books, okay? Doesn't matter what the subject is, doesn't matter what the topic, doesn't matter how much it is, it can be very cheap. If it's got some link that you've spotted and no one else has, when you whisk the curtain to the side and reveal it, it's impressive.
What's the strangest book you've ever come across?
Well, actually, do you know what? I just thought the last time I was at the marina, I bought a book which was a secret code book for a pilot in World War II who flew on and off aircraft carriers. And the oddest thing about it was it had lead around the edges of the boards and it was really heavy. Why do you think that was?
I have no idea.
So he could throw it overboard if he got caught.
Oh, fascinating.
It would sink like a stone. What an amazing thing. It was
Absolutely.
A really good book.
What is something that you regret selling in your career?
Well, that one.
That one. Okay. So how can we get in touch with you?
There's a good Facebook page at the moment for the Brighton Book Fair, because there's a big book fair up at the racecourse on October the 31st. I'm managing it. It's a PBFA fair, so it's all professional. It's all good stuff. And I think there's going to be 30 or 40 dealers there. We'll have to see how things work out. But I'm contactable through that, and I've got my own website, phone numbers, all that sort of thing. And, I'd love to hear from anybody that's got a nice collection of books for me to look at, or who just wants to chat about old books, really, quite frankly. We all share the same hobby and the same enthusiasms.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much for joining me today. I really appreciate it, and all the best with the book fair. Today I'm speaking with Nash from the bookshop Much Ado Books. Thank you for joining me today, Nash.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So, what books are you most frequently asked for?
Gosh, that's a great question, and one I wish were much easier to answer, because we get so many requests from so many people. A frequent question is for the Dirk Bogarde book, Great Meadow, simply because he lived near our shop, and the book is about growing up in the area in the Cuckmere Valley, and I think it rightly has earned a place in people's thoughts because it is such a well-written memoir that evokes a time and a place in a beautiful way. And of course, as a famous actor, people feel so fondly for him, and he wrote a number of memoirs, a number of novels, but it really is Great Meadow, I think, that stands out in people's minds. I would be remiss if I didn't mention people ask for the Penguin series of books as well. They're terrific paperback editions. They were published originally as a coup, really. The concept of affordable, beautifully designed books that could be sold all over the place and could reach everybody was such a brilliant idea. And now they number in the hundreds, and there's a wonderful Penguin Collectors Society that's very active. And it's really nice that people are interested in them, interested in collecting them, interested in the authors and the subjects that they covered. So it's a pleasure that we can have, in fact, at the moment, we're really pleased. We have quite a number of them available.
Fantastic. And what would you say is the strangest book you've ever found?
That is a really difficult question, and I'm going to just stretch the answer a little bit for you, because it was not exactly the book, but really it was the most poignant set of books. We once bought a set of Frank Baum books about the Wizard of Oz, and they are unusual to find in hardback and in beautiful shape with the illustrations, and there were dozens of them done over a period of time by various authors. And this was a little collection that clearly somebody had put together lovingly, and we were we felt really kind of honored to have a chance to have the books in our shop, because we think they are, especially in America, they're one of the set pieces. They're one of the pieces of American history, in a way. And when we were looking the books over after we had taken them for processing, we found the most remarkable heartfelt note in the books, in which they were given by a young man to his lady love, and he had collected these books as a child and loved the set so much, and as a mark of his love for her, was passing them on to her. And we looked at each other and we thought, this is tragic. She's just brought the books into us and sold them to us. We were never able to track him down. We tried to work out who he might be, and it just never happened. And we always think that somewhere there's some relationship that didn't happen the way it should have, and this poor man doesn't have his set of Wizard of Oz books.
Gosh, that is fascinating. And so how do you determine the value of pre-loved books like that?
That is a great question. We've been working with old books for 35 years, and many of them are like familiar friends. We kind of think of them as objects that we just temporarily have and need to find a new home for. The object is for us to make the books as affordable as we can possibly do. And so there's a mixture of experience, instinct, a sense of how the market has changed over the years, research, reference books. It takes a lot of work to understand all of the variables, and it is one of the things about running a bookshop like ours that we get to keep learning all the time. Every day there's something to research, something to figure out, some new challenge, something that comes across our desk that we haven't seen before or haven't seen for a long time, and that we get to keep learning about all these things is such a treat.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for joining me today, Nash. I really appreciate it. How can we find you?
Well, we are in the most beautiful downland village of Alfriston, open currently every day from 11 to 5. We are on the internet at www.muchadobooks.com.
Local author Emma Jackson is with us now on the Brighton Book Club. Welcome, Emma. Can you introduce yourself?
Hi. Yeah, I live down on the south coast as well, not too far from Brighton, with my partner and my two daughters. I grew up in London and I used to be a PA, and I had my first novel published in November 2019, which was a rom-com called A Mistletoe Miracle. And since then, I've written four other books, three of which have been published, one soon.
So when did you start writing, Emma? Were you one of these people that wrote ever since they were like 3 years old?
Yeah, pretty much. As soon as I could pick up a pencil and I knew what to do with it. Yeah, I was writing stories. I used to write them about my toys to start off with. And then when I was a teenager, I moved on to fan fiction. So it was like trying to emulate Point Horror books and Sweet Valley High books, and then Dawson's Creek when I got a bit older. I had a break when I was sort of settling down into work and moving out of home, and sort of life took over. And then I started a English literature degree with the Open University. And one of the modules was creative writing, and I was doing it. And I just thought, oh, this was what I always wanted to do. It like reminded me, this is what I love. So I just started to spend all my spare time working on my first novel, basically.
And what was your journey to publication like? Because it's not easy out there.
Oh, it's not. It was quite long. Yeah. I probably started writing my first novel when I was around 25, and I didn't get a publishing deal until I was 36. So it was like, I mean, it was on and off, and I had two kids within that time, which meant, you know, sort of having those pauses for when you can't do it around having a baby necessarily. I didn't really know what I was doing when I sent out like my first sort of batch of submissions to agents and things like that, because there wasn't a lot of information then. But then as time went on, the internet and Twitter and these writing communities came around, and I just learned so much more, and I joined them. And then I became a member of the RNA, the Romantic Novelists Association, as part of their new writers scheme. And the first year I was in that, I went along to the conference, and there was an announcement about a new digital imprint with Orion. And they were giving a special sort of shout out at the RNA conference, first off, for people to send in, and then they were going to launch properly. And I took part in that. And by the end of the summer, they'd come to me and said, yeah, we want to publish your book. So it was a long journey, and then it was really fast. I think that's the way it always seems.
So you write romance. I'd love to know where you get your inspirations from, and what books you read growing up, what films, music, anything, like what are you inspired by?
Definitely looking back, the books I was reading when I was younger, I mentioned Point Horrors and things like that, and it was like I always loved it when there was the talk of a relationship. You know, it was like those first ones where they were touching on boyfriends and girlfriends and getting a bit older and stuff. But when I didn't really think of romance being a genre that I enjoyed reading until I was much older. And then I realised, oh, I do actually always enjoy it when there's a couple that gets together in the book, you know. Because there's a lot of, I don't know, just a bit of snobbery about romance, sort of, you know, you're not seen as like serious. But everything that I loved, all the books, I'm very much a genre fan. It's not that, you know, literary fiction is amazing, but it's not my thing. I love the pace of genre fiction, and the thing that you know what you're getting with it, but it's always different. And that's the beauty of it. It's like the genre convention of in romance that you're going to have a couple get together and there's going to be a happily ever after. But how they get there and their different personalities and how that works in the environment they're in, whether that's fantasy or whether that's a suspense or whether it's a contemporary that's like setting a village, it's always different. And that's kind of what inspires me when I'm writing my own as well. It's, you know, just figuring out that jigsaw puzzle of how that will develop.
Your new book, Emma, Sleepless in Sicily, is out this month. What is it about?
Okay, this is the question all writers hate, isn't it? What's your book about? But it's an opposites attract romance about Lila, who's a shy makeup artist, and Rowan, who's an outspoken movie star, and their paths cross when they begin shooting a film in Sicily. And despite their worlds and personalities being so different, they begin to develop feelings for each other, but can they make it work when she hates being centre of attention, and but gossip follows him wherever he goes?
Can you read us some? It sounds fabulous.
Okay, thank you. Yes. So to give it a bit of context, the bit that I'm going to read is from a little bit later in the story when they're out in Sicily filming, and Lila's been out to lunch with some work colleagues and had a bit too much to drink and got lost on the beach. And Rowan's found her and said, come back to the villa so you can like sober up and be safe. Yeah. And basically when she's woken up, she's absolutely mortified because I've called her shy, but she's actually socially anxious, which is a different kettle of fish. And Rowan pulled the bowl out of the fridge and set it on the table with some clean cutlery and another glass of water before taking the seat opposite. Lila sat down, her cheeks flaming red again, and hovered the fork over the pasta. You're not allergic to nuts or lactose or anything, are you? It's just pesto from a jar mixed in with it. I'm no chef. No, it's great, thanks. She speared one piece and chewed on it for an age, like it was a piece of leather, staring all the others as though it was a prison sentence. Did she feel she had to say yes to eating, or was it just because she was forcing herself to eat, to try and absorb the alcohol? It would probably help if he wasn't sitting opposite staring at her, given that she just admitted she was chronically shy. No, she had social anxiety. So how is social anxiety different from being shy? She swallowed suddenly, her eyes raised to his face again, that rabbit caught in the headlights expression. I'm not questioning what you're telling me, he barreled onwards, like the steamroller he couldn't help being. I'd just like to understand if you don't mind talking about it. She tapped the fork on the edge of the bowl lightly. It was barely even making a noise. He could almost hear the cogs turning in her head, and when she lifted her eyes to his again, the intensity in them shocked him. So often she flitted her gaze away, but he felt this like she was probing him for something, looking deep down to see whether it was worth her pushing herself to open up, whether she could trust him perhaps. In those quiet seconds with the golden light illuminating the room and making the green of her eyes glow, he wanted her to find him worth it with a depth that shocked him. He stared right back and finally she blinked and drew in a breath like she was taking a run up to jump off a diving board. I don't know, it's hard to explain. I think it's mainly about the effect it ends up having on your life. A smile curled at the edge of her mouth and his heart beat a little faster. She was going to do it. She'd seen something in him that said he was worth sharing this with. Have you ever seen that old movie Gremlins? Sure, my sister loves it. He folded his arms on the edge of the table, leaning in, genuinely curious to see where this was going. Right, well, imagine the main one, the original, what's it called, Gizmo. He's just like a normal mogwai. That fluffy little thing is like shyness. Bit high maintenance, doesn't like bright lights, but still something you can have as a temperamental pet. And a lot of people will think it's kind of cute. Then you accidentally get water on it, an unhealthy level of anxiety or paranoia or something. And it multiplies into this evil spawn, which runs amok, basically effing up your life and destroying everything. So, like shyness on cocaine. Lila's eyebrows raised. I guess that works too. I don't take cocaine, if that's what you're thinking. I wasn't. He narrowed his eyes. You're thinking it now, though, aren't you? No, I swear, she laughed a bit. I was wondering if I did start thinking that. Would you care? You talk as though people's opinions don't bother you at all. Is that really possible?
Tiny round of applause for me. That sounds great. Thank you so much. So, Emma.
Thank you.
We, on this episode of the Brighton Book Club, are talking about pre-loved books. Are there any secondhand bookshops on the South Coast that you absolutely love?
I wouldn't say it's on the south coast, but there's a lovely one in East Grinstead, which is very helpfully called the East Grinstead Bookshop. It's quite easy. And that's absolutely gorgeous. To be fair, I haven't been there for quite a while, but I'm assuming they still do secondhand books. They did when I went there. It's this old Tudor building, and it's just got lots of different areas that you can walk down. And, you know, it had like, have you seen those painted stairs where they have like the book on each of the stairs at the side, and there's just lots of little cubby holes, and it's like the perfect labyrinth to go and get lost in, basically.
Oh my gosh, that's really nice. Amazing. I'm gonna have to check it out. I hope it is still there. Talking about pre-loved books yourself, what was the last book that you read and lent it out as soon as you'd read it because you absolutely loved it?
Well, it wasn't as soon as I read it. I don't know a lot of bookworms, which, like, in real life, I know a lot online. I'm in a lot of communities where I chat loads about books, but in real life, I don't know loads of people. But I did have a friend of mine during the pandemic. She had like a doubly hard pandemic, and she was wanting to get into reading again. She'd sort of lost the love for it and wanted something light and to just get absorbed in a world that wasn't doom scrolling on social media. So I lent her Sophie Kinsella's I Owe You One, which I loved, and she did it, and it gave her the bug, which was amazing, because it was like I gave her a selection. Actually, I gave her that one, and I think it was The Forgotten Village as well by Lorna Cook, because I thought maybe just something that's quite page turning. But she went for the romance, and she loved it. And then, yeah, I've been lending her books since, and that's an amazing feeling. I love that.
It's one of my favourite things. Yeah, a lot of my friends aren't particular readers, and anytime I go to any of their houses or flats, I just look around and there's just a pile of books that I've lent them that, bless them, probably never going to read, but the intention's there.
Oh, no.
Emma, thank you so much for joining us this month. How can we find and follow you and get our hands on a copy of one of your fab books?
Right. It's been lovely to be on. Thank you so much for having me. You can find me. I've got a website, which is www.esjackson.co.uk, and there's a newsletter attached to that, which I don't send out loads, but it just gives news when there is some to give. I'm also on Twitter at esjackson1, and I have just recently dipped my toe into TikTok, which is hugely addictive. The BookTok, yeah, in particular, is it's amazing. You can lose yourself down that hole. But I've not done much on it, but I am hoping to. And you can find me on there as well as Emma S. Jackson 1. And my books are available with all ebook retailers. And hopefully the latest one, Sleepless in Sicily, will also be available in paperback in a few months.
If there's one thing I get as excited about as books, it is beer. So I was really, really excited when Unbarred Brewery and Taproom came on board to sponsor this episode of the Brighton Book Club and tell us all about their new beer, what they do, and their taproom. So I'm very excited to be joined by Brett and Beth, who are the marketing manager and head of sales and operations at Unbarred Brewery, which is based in Brighton. Brett, please can you tell us about Unbarred Brewery and Taproom?
Unbarred Brewery started in Jordan's back garden, which he is our head brewer and founder. Jordan started brewing out of a shed in 2014 and then eventually moved on to brew for other breweries and brew in other spaces before finding our home in the centre of Brighton, which is on Alder Place, which is where our tap room is also located. So we sell beers from there and make our beer there as well.
I would love to know a little bit more about the actual beer that you make. And we at the moment are drinking a really, really delicious beer, which is brewed especially to celebrate Pride Month. Can you tell us a bit more about this one?
So this is part of our NEIPA series. So last year we started doing our NEIPA series, which is New England IPAs. So we really wanted to show what we could showcase in our beer just by changing the hop combination. So we started this last year, and then January this year we decided to continue to do this, but really encompassing Brighton into our cans and all of our artwork. So what we're drinking at the moment is the seventh in our series. So it's our Nelson Suavin Galaxy and Mosaic Nipah, which is 7%. All of the beers have been 7%. And then what we've done each month is we've used a different local photographer and done a monochrome photo on the can. So what we really wanted to showcase was our local hometown and what makes Brighton, Brighton to us. So not necessarily conventional shots of the pier or what you find in Brighton. It was more so showing really the diversity of our town. So this can is an artwork by Jerry Webb. So it's somebody in high heels on Brighton seafront with the Pride flag in the background. We love this can so much, and I think it's one of my favourites so far in the series, because I really think it kind of sums up what we're trying to do with the series in general.
And I can add that it is absolutely delicious. So, Brett, I would love to know what your plans are for Pride Month in Brighton. I know that you're doing a pop-up, and I'd love to know more about it.
Yep, so on Saturday the 7th, which is when Pride would normally be in full swing, and sadly this year it's not, but understandably that it can't go ahead. We're going to be having a Pride celebration at our tap room, so we're going to have Albertus joining us to do fried chicken sandwiches, along with some vegan and veggie options. We're going to have some good music playing and just celebrate the day, and kind of everyone's welcome, very much kind of celebrate the day with decoration, colour and fun is the plan.
So now we've talked a bit about beer, I would like to talk a little bit about books. What are you reading at the moment, Beth?
It's going to sound quite cliche, but at the moment I am actually reading Natalia Watson, Beer, Taste the Evolution in 50 Styles. So I've started reading this. It's just a really, really nice summary of the different styles of beer. It's great at the moment, and it's great to look at when you're doing tastings and really engaging with people to kind of really read a bit more in depth about all the different styles. So that is actually what I'm reading at the moment.
And Brett, we spoke a bit earlier and you told me that your favourite book is a cookbook. So I would love to know more about what it is and why.
Yeah, I'm not much of a reader, but I do enjoy cooking. So my favourite cookbook is a book by Matthew Matson, and it's called A Cookbook, original name. But it's a very good mix of kind of high-end cooking, sort of lazy cooking, and also sort of just filthy food. And he makes it really accessible, and the recipes aren't too pretentious or make you worry too much about how much of this or how much of that you should put in. And he's got a really interesting backstory as well, as of kind of where he came from to where he's got to now. So yeah, it's good.
I'm really happy to say that Umbard have given us a discount code for listeners, and if you quote BTN Book Club at checkout when you buy Umbard when you buy Umbard beer online, you can get a 10% discount. So thank you very much, Beth, and thank you very much, Brett, for joining me. I'm really excited to come down on the 7th of August, and that discount code is active until the end of August. The iconic Warren venue has moved down to the seafront, and their programme is looking great. I'm really looking forward to taking my goddaughter to see Sarah and Duck, as well as catching The Late Show and Crater Comedy, which I really, really missed over lockdown. I picked up this month's book club book, City of Friends by Joanna Trollope, at Amnesty Books last month, and I think it's going to end up back there. Here's the blurb before I tell you why. The day Stacey Grant loses her job feels like the last day of her life, or at least the only life she'd ever known. For who was she if not a sissy high flyer, senior partner at one of the top private equity firms in London? As Stacey starts to reconcile her old life with the new, one without professional achievements or meetings, but instead long days at home with her dog and ailing mother, waiting for her successful husband to come home, she at least has the girls to fall back on, Beth, Melissa and Gabby. The girls, now women, had been best friends since the early days of university, right through their working lives, and through the happiness and heartbreaks in between. But these career women all have personal problems of their own, and when Stacey's redundancy forces a betrayal to emerge that was supposed to remain secret, their long-cherished friendships will be pushed to their limits. I
I'm not here to criticise books. This isn't why I started the Brighton Book Club. However, I didn't finish this one, and that happens sometimes, and that's okay. This wasn't the right one for me at the right time. For me, it's really important to be on board with the characters, and I just couldn't bring myself to be interested enough in their lives or their so-called problems to read on. I rarely don't finish a book, especially for the book club, because I take it quite seriously and I want you guys to know my thoughts if I have them. But I've always said that life is too short not to read books you don't love. Trollope is a hugely successful author. My opinion definitely doesn't matter to her, and she's clearly impressed thousands of people over her career. So it's always important to remember that books are so subjective. This was the wrong book at the wrong time for me. But perhaps if I was on holiday and not home working full time and feeling a bit anxious about the world, I might have enjoyed it more. I actually went on Goodreads, which most authors are told never to do, to look at the reviews of their book, and looked at some of the reviews, and some of them did say that this is one of her later books. It was published in the early mid-2000s, and she was writing all the way through the 90s and has been highly successful. She's written over 20, and people were saying that they felt as if her books had perhaps become a bit more formulaic and lost some of that love and verve that they had in her early books. So what I might do is try and pick up one of her earlier books and see if I have more luck with it. Our next book club book is local author Tanya Byrne's young adult novel Afterlove, which is out now with Hodder Children's. It's been described by the publisher as the lesbian love story you've been dying to read. Here is the blurb. Ash Persad is about to become a reaper in the afterlife, but she is determined to see her first love, Poppy Morgan, again. The only thing that separates them is death. Car headlights. The first thing Ash hears is the snap of breaking glass as the windscreen hits her and breaks into a million pieces like stars. But she made it. She's still here. Or is she? This New Year's Eve, Ash gets an RSVP from the afterlife she can't decline, to join a clan of fierce girl reapers who take the souls of the city's dead to await their fate. But Ash can't forget her first love, Poppy, and she will do anything to see her again, even if it means they only get a few more days together. Dead or alive, not even death can tear them apart. I started this book last night and I'm so excited to get stuck into it. Tanya is such a great writer, I'm already hooked, and even better that she is based in Brighton. The book club is also available as a podcast where you can download from wherever you get yours. And you can get in touch with us on Instagram at btnbookclub and email us at btnbookclub@gmail.com. If you're interested in sponsoring an episode, get in touch with me or with Radio Reverb. Thanks for listening.